What is good, NBA fans? Welcome into another week of Dropping Dimes. I'm your host, Matt Nost. So today, we're going to bounce around a little bit and discuss, because we're into the doldrums, so to speak, of the NBA season, where, you know, not a lot of seismic change happens week in, week out. And I didn't think I was going to talk about it, but the more I thought about it, and then I started getting messages from people, they wanted to hear my 2 cents on the Alex Caruso, Grayson Allen play from a few days ago. And I would imagine you would guess my feelings on it. I thought it was a dirty play. Just plain and simple. I understand Grayson Allen's assessment of the situation, that he was going up for a basketball play with his left hand, and then he swung around with his right to go after the ball. And a lot of people rightly pointed out, how is this foul any different from the Talen Horton Tucker and Jalen Suggs foul that happened, you know, basically right at the same time, where Suggs went down hard and Talen Horton Tucker was the primary defender on that. LeBron James was like a secondary defender as well. And Suggs went down and slapped his head on the ground really hard on the side of it. So first and foremost, yes, I think the Grayson Allen play was dirty. I would have been fine with it had he just gone up to contest. But when he swings his body around and then, you know, because of the momentum and whatnot, really looks like he tries to throw Caruso to the ground. I sincerely doubt he was trying to, you know, WWE body slam him to the ground in midair, but that's what it looked like in real time. And then on reviews, it does not help his case. Plus, Grayson Allen has a history of doing these dirty plays. Like, I knew that about him before he got drafted. I stopped watching college basketball quite a few years ago, but I heard about how dirty he was, and I watched a highlight reel of him at Duke just being petulant and an asshole, intentionally tripping people or just acting like a child. And then there was the dust up in Summer League where there's really no need for this. And he's clobbering guys in the head and throwing elbows way too high. Basically, it's like Morris Brothers type of behavior. And she's like, there's no need for this. So for Allen, you just don't get the benefit of the doubt in this. You have too much of a track record of acting like an asshole. So when something big like this happens, we're all just going to assume you're an asshole. Then there's the shot of him on the sideline with a towel trying to cover his face, but he's smirking and laughing. And his explanation of that is a teammate just told him a joke and he was laughing, which I don't know that that helps the situation. You should be primarily focused on the health of the other individual that you sent just crashing to the ground. And instead, you're, you know, out of that moment and you've moved forward and you're just enjoying your night and laughing away. And the interesting thing is, so Mark Stein on Twitter had put out that teams around the league were interested to see what type of suspension came from this, because even though they don't have a dog in the fight, they would like to see this type of behavior basically dissuaded from individuals, stop them from doing anything like this. And I think that when a player goes up with that much force and momentum, they should be treated like a defenseless receiver in the NFL. It's like if there is this much speed, momentum, and energy, we should basically, I mean, I realize that opens up the floodgates of anytime any person does, then you really, it hampers the defense to be able to protect the basket. And once again, had Allen just gone up and gone straight for a block instead of flying into Caruso and basically try and take him out midair, I would agree with him, be like, that's an unfortunate hard foul, but that's part of the game. I don't know. I can keep replaying it over and over in my mind. And I think the reason it hits so hard is this is the first time in quite a while where, as Bulls fans, we have real hope. We have a team. I'm not sure that we can win a championship, but we can really compete for one, and we could push teams. And I would love to be proven wrong on that. But now we just throw Caruso into the mix. And he just had surgery, and he's out for 6 to 8 weeks. And he's, as I've said in the past on this show, him and Lonzo really changed the defensive identity of this team. Now guys who in the past weren't known for their defense are starting to play excellent team defense. Zach LaVine was playing good defense. DeMar was playing good defense. Vooch was playing good defense. We were getting performances from guys that aren't known historically for such behavior. And it really stems from, my belief, the two of them and the amount of effort that they put in each week. It makes a hell of a difference. And now Caruso's out for 6 to 8 weeks. And Lonzo still hasn't had surgery on his knee, but once he does, he's out for 6 to 8 weeks. Derrick Jones Jr. just fractured his right index finger, and he's out 6 to 8 weeks. LaVine just got back from injury. With COVID protocols hit our team harder than any other. And just I think that Grayson Allen foul is an encapsulation of what this season's hopes being dashed before they really ever got started. Because more than likely we're going to drop out of that top tier in the East as we, you know, we're 3-10 in our last 10. We do have depth, which is good, but it's going to make a hell of a difference not having those two guys in the lineup night in, night out. And another part of the discussion that kind of rankles me is I don't mind that the team is defending Grayson Allen, and I don't mind that the organization is defending Grayson Allen. That makes all the sense in the world. You have to. It's the fans that I've seen on Twitter and on Reddit and on YouTube and a couple other places that all Bucks fans that I have seen, save for literally two, maybe three, are fully defending the guy, saying that everybody else is blowing it out of proportion. And they're acting as though we've all been against them and they have no other choice but to back the play of Grayson Allen in this type of behavior. When in fact, last year we were all ecstatic for him. Couldn't have been happier. I was pulling for the Bucks. That's who I wanted to win the championship. Primarily because it's a small market team that really developed its players. I mean, Giannis was a project from day one and Chris Middleton was barely in the G League, and now they're your two primaries on a championship team. It gives hope to small markets and reduces the ability of large markets just to poach the best guys over and over and over again if you can develop your own and then get those guys to stay, like Giannis is willing to do. And Phoenix had done that as well, but they also brought in CP3, which transformed their identity pretty much overnight. But another semi-small market, along with Milwaukee, we were all excited that these two were the ones in this. So to go to this back against the wall, it's everybody against us. She's like, that's not even the case. I don't know why you're defending. That to me is the most shocking aspect of this, to see Bucks fans who I think of as sane and reasonable, rational. They're not Laker fans where everything, you know, they need to be a winner every fucking season. These damn Bucks fans are like, nah, I was completely fine. I saw a few blaming Caruso. Like, it was his fault for going up for a dunk. He shouldn't have done that. What? What are you talking about? Once again, Ed Allen just defended the play with his left arm or whatever else. It's the when he swings around and his right arm, he says he's going for the ball. It kind of looks like that. And it also kind of looks like he's throwing him body slam style down to the fucking ground. Yeah, I don't know. And then the tweet the next day from Buck Social Media didn't help, although that was a scheduled tweet. You know it was. It's not anything to do with the Bucks trying to rub salt in the wound. It is just an unfortunate set of circumstances, but it added fuel to the fire and outrage. So Grayson Allen ends up getting a one-game suspension. Leading up to it, the most common I saw were people assuming he would get two. Some thought that he should get three. I was anticipating two because that seemed fair. One seemed more like a slap on the wrist. Two is you're taking away two game checks. Could be enough to send some sort of a message. Although I saw some people saying that he should be out for as long as Caruso is out, and there's just no way. The Players Association would fight that tooth and nail, and they would lose. And I don't even know if Silver, the league, has the authority to do that without going to an arbitrator or anything like that. I'm not sure that they can just take somebody out over a basketball play like that for 6 to 8 weeks. I think that, you know, it just sucks. It really sucks. I didn't want to talk about it today, but that's all my mind has been dwelling on for days now is, dear, we were number one in the East. I don't know that we would have stayed there for the rest of the season, but we would have been a tough out every stinking night. And now we're going to have to go through until well after post All-Star break into, you know, March with the season wrapping up. And hopefully we haven't tumbled down into the play-in game, situation. I don't think that that's possible because in the East, I think there's only really six good teams. Although, you know, Toronto's catching a little bit of fire. If the Celtics finally turned a corner with last night's triumphant win, perhaps they start climbing back into this discussion. The East is really close, though, right now. I mean, the difference between first and sixth is what? A game and a half? Two games max? Let me see if I can pull it up real quick. I mean, it's bunched together. Two games, 1 through 6. Miami Heat are number one. The Bulls are at 2.5 game back. Brooklyn and the Bucks are at 3 and 4 at 1 game back. Cleveland is a game and a half, and Philly is 2 games back. And God love Cleveland. I hope they stay in that. They're a boatload of fun. But now I'm actively rooting against the Bucks. I didn't foresee that coming, but I am actively rooting against the Bucks. I was fine with you guys having all the good things, and then if your fans are going to be this shitty, nope. Actively rooting. It's Giannis was the face of one of the most newly beloved franchises. Well, Grayson Allen has tainted that. I realize he's off the bench getting you 12 points a game, but is that enough to sacrifice your good standing with the entire population at large? I guess if you win another championship, it is. Who the fuck knows? But anyway, I don't know. I'd be interested to see once Allen is, if any other team is willing to pick him up. Because he's not engendering any kind of goodwill with the rest of the league at large. So we shall see. We shall see. But let's move on, because as much as I've been thinking about this for days on end, I can't do it anymore. I can't. And you know what? Here's another one. If you want to say the THT play was the same, I think the difference to me is A, THT doesn't have a history, and B, as soon as it happened, THT went into basically like a form of shock. And he stood there with his arms out, hands splayed open, and just kind of like looked down and started looking around holy shit, what just happened? Oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, look in his eyes. and he was somewhat frozen in the moment because he didn't know how to react. That was not his intention. Yes, he was going up to basically stop the dunk or the layup or whatever it was going to be, but it was not to hurt the individual. And I can't say the same for Grayson. He's tried to hurt other players in the past by elbowing him in the head and tripping him and pushing and throwing elbows that you don't get the benefit of the doubt. You don't. It's like when Markieff Morris was looking for sympathy, even though the duration which he's been out has been pretty incredible, I still don't care. You've built up years upon years worth of being an asshole, and finally someone treated you like the asshole you are, and you're shocked that the world is not on your side. I'm sorry. You and your brother, your brother's even a bigger offender of this, don't deserve it. You haven't earned that right. Whereas some of your other teammates would, if you know, if, in Markieff's case, if that was Jimmy or Bam or Kyle, Tyler Hero, Duncan Robinson, any of them, we all would have been like, he was basically going for a take foul and it went a little too far. Whereas Keith, just like, no, he was being a prick and he got dealt with. So Grayson, my hope though with the Bulls is they don't retaliate. I don't want them to. I don't want to stoop to their level. If you guys want to live in the gutter, go right ahead. We're going to take the high road. And we're not going to give you the satisfaction of wallowing in the shit with you. Go ahead and be the villains. Congratulations. You guys are pricks. Which sucks because Giannis, Chris, and Drew, and Brooke, Pat, like they've got a whole slew of guys that are really likable and seem like genuinely good people, especially Drew. Seems like one of the nicest people you'll ever meet. And now I don't fucking care. So there you go. You lost somebody who would have been rooting for you for whatever that's worth. But adios, muchachos. And now the Bulls have to deal with injuries galore, but a ton of people have to deal with injuries. Tim Hardaway Jr. just went out. He fractured his fifth metatarsal in his, I believe it was his right foot. He was going up for a layup, and it just looked like a routine layup. He's flying into the lane, but he's now out, and there's quite a few injuries that are holding guys out. The big ones you know, but then smaller players around. Which is the course of the season. The Bulls just seem to have been hit by it a little bit more. But why don't we switch over to two just complete polar extremes of strange games last night that I think also somewhat encapsulate the identities of the teams themselves. So we can start with, you can either say the epic comeback of the Clippers or the epic collapse of the Wizards. But the Clippers came back from down 35 last night to beat the Wizards on the road, 116 to 115. At the end of the half, the first half, the Clippers are down by 30. Then they go down, you know, in the third by 35, but they close out the third quarter. And they cut the lead to 17. They're still down 17 points going into the fourth quarter. And it ultimately, they lose by one. They get a foul on Luke Kennard, top of the key three. I think it was Beal that fouled him. And he hits the free throw. And they take the lead and win the game. And there was a great couple tweets from, I don't know if I'm pronouncing his name right, but Om Youngmisic on Twitter. And it's O-H-M Young, Y-O-U-N-G-M-I-S-U-K. So you can find him on Twitter if you want to. So he said the Clippers are the first team over the last 25 seasons to overcome a 24-point deficit and win three times in the same season. And they did it in this month of January. They beat the Nuggets, Sixers, and now the Wizards. And they did all three without Paul George, and Kawhi Leonard. And then on top of that, the Clippers' 35-point comeback is the second largest in play-by-play era since 1996-97. The Jazz overcame a 36-point deficit against the Nuggets in 1996 per at ESPN Stats Info. And the Clippers did it with mostly reserves as Ty Lue leaned on the likes of Mann, Kennard, and Coffey. And it's not even that. Ty Lue played the entirety of all 12 available players. Everybody who suited up for the Clippers last night played. Everybody. And they did. They leaned on Coffey and Kennard. It was a 35-point comeback. Now, to you, is that more indicative or exemplative of who the Clippers are or who the Wizards are? And I think it's both, actually. Because the Wizards, the weird thing is now, reports are that the Wizards are trying to make a trade at the trade deadline to bolster this roster. Because I think their fear is that Brad Beal is going to finally want out, even though they made moves and they brought in guys and they're trying to develop their young guys. Although they just got Hachimura back and they just got Thomas Bryant back, and that gives them more depth at the front court. But, you know, the bulk of the team was going to be Beal and Dinwiddie and this duo together and then parts around them. And when you add, like, Kuzma's played really well for them, KCP, by and large, has played really well for them. And so you add all this into the mix. You ship out Westbrook. You bring back three other guys. Montrezl Harrell's played well for them. And they're, you know, in the lower aspect of the play-in game at this point. They're currently sitting in 10th. And now they want to be movers and shakers in the come trade deadline. And I don't even know who's out there, like what kind of packages they want to go out and get. Because say they want to go get Jeremy Grant. Jeremy Grant, according to reports, yesterday went to the Pistons and said, here are a list of teams that I'm willing to go to, because he has certain stipulations. He wants to go somewhere where he's going to be one of the primary scorers. And he also wants to go somewhere that is willing to give him a four-year extension on his current and pay him somewhere in the ballpark of $25 to $30 million a year. Well, that narrows your list down quite a bit. Are the Wizards part of that? I don't know. Hypothetically, he could be the number two there behind Brad Beal. If you want to say Dinwiddie and Kuzma, Jeremy Grant's now going to be our second option, but does that really move the needle all that much for you? I can't imagine it does. I mean, the irony is Jeremy Grant would be best served going back to Denver, but I don't think he's going to do that. But the Wizards, yeah, so they want to shake things up at the trade deadline. It's like, I'm not entirely sure why. And then on the flip side, the Clippers, they've done this in the past. It's what drew Kawhi and PG to them. They overperform with miscellaneous parts. And can they do this for long enough to tread water for when the potential of Paul George and Kawhi Leonard could be back this season? Because before, Paul George was basically held out with that ulnar tendon injury. There was discussion that Kawhi was ahead of schedule and he is pushing to come back this year. And then PG has gone down and now they're holding him out. And reports are that he might be done for the year. It's unofficial at this point. And the fact of the matter is the Clippers don't have their draft picks because of the Paul George trade. So it behooves them to build up the Boston juniors and get Trey Mann more young, maybe build up the confidence of Luke Kennard a little bit more, you know, even though you gave him the four-year deal, which pissed off Montrezl Harrell and other guys. But develop the roster that you have and make a run at next year. I don't know, but perhaps they're just going to be this feisty team that has no real aspirations of anything in the playoffs, but they could make some noise during the regular season and show that there's really something here and they could prove their championship medal next year. I don't know, though. With the Clippers, though, it's always been it's not always been, but it seems like since Kawhi and PG have gotten there, it's been about next year. And that first year, PG, after they lose in the playoffs, just the, even though they were the odds on favorite, I chose them and everybody chose them to win the championship. And the first post game presser that he does after they lose, and she's like, well, nobody on this team was thinking championship or bust, and be like, man, get the fuck out of here with that. We all know that was the case, but it's such a crazy game. I mean, they've done this three times now in the month of January without PG and Kawhi. And can they continue to do this? They're never out of a game. That only builds the confidence of your players. Maybe now they come out instead of having to trail from behind. They're giving everybody their best punch from the tip. And suddenly this team is just feisty and a difficult out night in, night out. So the other is the weird game from last night is that Celtics-Kings game. And ask yourself again, was that just an absolute drubbing by the Celtics or a collapse from the Kings? The final ended up being 75. It was in Boston, 75 to 128. It wasn't even that close, to be perfectly honest. It was just beyond obscene for the entirety of the game. To put it to you in perspective like this, if you do Jason Tatum plus Jaylen Brown and then add in either Aaron Nesmith, Robert Williams, or Josh Richardson, one of those three between Nesmith, Williams, and Richardson, coupled with Tatum and Brown, those three players outscored the Kings on their own. Nesmith had 10. Basically, you only need 10 because Tatum and Brown combined for 66. So all you need to do is get 10 points. And those are the other three players on the team last night that scored for the Celtics that scored in double digits. So you just need one of those three. And then suddenly, you've beaten the freaking Kings. Now, there was no De'Aaron Fox, but in no world do I think De'Aaron Fox pushes them into some sort of contention last night where suddenly it's, you know, 120 to 128 or something ridiculous like that. The Kings just played awfully, which happens. Over the course of the season, you're going to have nights where you play really badly. And the Kings shot 18% from three on 33 attempts, whereas the Celtics shot 44% on 45 attempts. They made 20 of them. And the Celtics overall just shot better because that and the rebounds, the Celtics crushed them on the boards. 67 to 45. They out-rebounded them by 22 boards. But then beyond that, it's like, well, of course the Celtics won the assist game because they're making their shots and the Kings are not. So that stat isn't really wholly indicative. But fouls, the Celtics fouled more. The Celtics turned the ball over more. Not by a wide margin, but it just they hit more of their shots. And I think in this instance, unfortunately for the Kings, I think it's more indicative of who they are. And it's time to basically chart a course for what your future is going to be. Because I think if you can find a dance partner for De'Aaron Fox, it's time to move on from Fox, hand the reins over to Tyrese Halliburton and Davion Mitchell, and start anew. Find a suitor for Harrison Barnes because somebody will give you a good asset for him. Find a suitor for potentially Buddy Hield. Get draft picks back in and really just tear this thing down to the studs and start over again. And build of the new front court with Davion Mitchell and Tyrese Halliburton. Because they're the only team in the West in that lower tier that I don't think I would fear. They're currently sitting at 13th and they have a 3-game lead on OKC, who's below them, and a 3.5 game lead on the Rockets. But I actually personally think the Kings are potentially the worst in the West. Because at least OKC is young and frisky, and they'll give you a good game. Houston has some interesting talent, and I think the collection of that talent can also give you a good game, whereas Sacramento, even though there's a quote from Tyrese Haliburton saying, you know, I'm not worried about the previous history of what's happened to the Kings. We're going to change that. I have a different mentality. This team has a different mentality. While that may be true, I really don't. The Kings are, I don't know. I think that shimmy that you saw in Shaqton the other night from the top of the key, and then Gentry getting pissed off because what is this showboat and shit when we're, then you miss it. It's one thing if you make it, but I don't know. I think that's kind of indicative of who the Kings are. And just for the Celtics, this could be who they are. The problem with the Celtics is you get a game like this, and then their next game, you very easily see Tatum go 6 for 22, and Brown goes, you know, 5 for 19, and they shoot their team out of the game and they lose. The Celtics is a roller coaster, up and down and up and down. They're currently sitting in ninth seed, but I just, their inconsistency, I think, will be their downfall this year. And while they should explore trade options, I don't think they're going to get anything near good enough back for Jaylen Brown. That's who you'd have to break up. And I'm not sure Celtics fans want that to happen unless it's a clear upgrade. And it doesn't, I don't see anybody out there right now that is a clear upgrade. Your best available will be Simmons. And while it'll help your defense, you're swapping excellent shooting, once again, inconsistent, but excellent shooting, Jaylen Brown, for somebody that will only shoot from 5 feet in. So I don't know, but I just, watching along, I didn't watch the game itself, but just having the game tracker on for that Celtics and Kings game, just the lead kept growing and kept growing and kept growing. You're like, dear God. And then on the flip side, to catch the end of that Clippers game as they kept chipping away at it. And you know, eventually you see it. And I need to see a better angle on that Luke Kennard three. Because I'm not entirely sure. It seemed slightly ticky-tack, to be perfectly honest. But I'd need to see a better replay. Just saw the overhead where Beal kind of, it looked like maybe pushed him when he was in air. I don't know. But immediately Beal was apoplectic and just like hands up, like, what did I do? And that was the game. But two crazy games. And there was a, but at this point in the season, because we're right in the mix in the doldrums, you kind of gravitate towards those weird anomalies and aberrations because there's quite a bit of, you know, ho-hummishness in all of this. You know, the Sixers beat the Pelicans, and the Pelicans have been playing better, and the Sixers have been playing really good. But once again, I'm not sure how much I buy into the Sixers run as of right now, because the vast majority of the teams during this run have been pretty, you know, average to shit. They've got a couple wins in there that I think are legitimate. They beat Miami in Miami. That's a good win. But they've also gotten to play the Rockets twice and the Magic, and they won one against the Wizards and they lost one against the Wizards, and they lost to Charlotte. Then they beat what? They beat the Nets. So they've got a couple of good wins in there, and then they got most of the wins are like, okay, well, you should win that. I'm not undercutting the win entirely, but I'm not sure if I'm buying into this. They have a stretch coming up where they'll have Phoenix and Memphis, and now that the Lakers are at full strength, Although AD didn't play particularly well last night, still to have their entire team back and increases their defensive switchability and their potency on offense, because now it's like the pick and roll with Russ is lethal again, because you can get Anthony Davis rolling to the rim for easy dunks. So that'll be a good test. You know, the Lakers don't have anybody defensively that can stop Embiid, but I'm not sure the Sixers can match up quite well enough if AD is playing anywhere near where he could, because LeBron is playing really well right now, especially for a 37-year-old. So basically you just say like LeBron and Embiid cancel each other out. Well, then after that, if Davis looks close to Davis, I don't think the Sixers have anybody that can really answer that. Now you go on down the line from there. I think I take more Sixers role players. And I think they're better suited for their roles on the team over what the Lakers have, but that'll be an interesting game. But primarily the Memphis and the Phoenix games coming up, if I'm going to believe that the Sixers with Embiid playing lights out right now are legitimate and potentially could make a championship push, you need to beat those teams. But like the rest of the games last night and over the previous few days are just like the Nuggets beat the Pistons. Unsurprising. Raptors beat the Hornets. Well, they're kind of, you know, close to being at the same level. So I think if you play that 10 times, that could be a 5-5 split. You know, so on and so forth. So until we get to post All-Star, it's a lot of teams like somewhat going through the motions, gearing up towards that rest. And then the real playoff push is coming post All-Star break. And we're very short from that. We'll slowly get the leak out of the announcements of All-Star starters, and then the coaches have to vote on reserves, and then we'll get reserves after that. Although there's been one change at the All-Star game, which I think is really interesting, which is the Rising Stars Challenge game, which in the past has been rookies versus sophomores, and they've done U.S. versus international. And this year they're going to do a tournament style, and they're going to have four teams of seven players made up of 12 rookies, 12 sophomores, and then four players from the G League Ignite team, which I think is very smart. If you really want to get prospects to not sign overseas and go through the G League developmental process, because you can already pay the top tier of the G League guys, I think it's $1 million per season, which is a competitive salary, then to give those types of individuals the stage of playing in the All-Star game with tons of eyes on them, it would even more so incentivize guys that don't want to play in college, they just want to make the jump to playing professional basketball, to go to the G League. And it just builds the G League up just a little bit more. And it's smart on the NBA's side from the business to build up their minor league system to a point where it's not an afterthought from the average fan. You might, upon seeing these guys, start paying attention to what's happening in the G League, especially with the G League Ignite. These are supposed to be the top tier teams and especially the top tier talent. And they're more than likely all first-round draft picks, or the bulk of them, from the Ignite. I like that switch. We do a little tournament. We mix and match all the players. I don't know how they're going to do that. I didn't get that far into the article. I was just so focused on the interesting nature of splitting up the 24 players that you're going to be bringing in. Because you also have, if it was rookies versus sophomores, man, I might have to pick the rookies in this one, because there's a boatload of interesting rookies this year that look like they're going to have an impact on the game for the next decade and a half. Like a whole bunch of them. And now even more guys like Cade Cunningham is proving his mettle. Suggs seems to be putting it together a little bit here and there. I think the only one that scares me as of right now is Green on Houston, because by the numbers and record, they've been better without him. You know, it's not like it's a dramatic, huge shift, but they have been better when he's out. And as much as I don't take the "are the Grizzlies better without Ja Morant" talk seriously, I am intrigued by this one because it could motivate him to understand why he's not exactly melding with his team and helping them put their best foot forward out there. But yeah, it's an interesting shift. So why don't we go over to the chat? I have neglected to get to it. There is a whole slew of this, so I'm going to go through, see if there's any, you know, easy questions that I can jump on real quick. But so far we got JMB, Yure Mugerli, Riley Pangrass. Riley Pangrass says, "Your Bulls need some depth now. Trade LaVine for some pieces from the Lakers, THT, Nunn, and Ellington for him. Totally fair trade." Yep, I agree. We got depth. That's the one thing. We do have some depth, especially at the guard position for Ruby Down, Caruso, and Lonzo. We still have Ayo Dosunmu and Kobe White, and we can get some run there. And we just got Javonte Green back. But losing Derek Jones Jr. on top of the other two injuries does not help. So Owen Hart says, "I don't know if you saw, but Dwayne Wade had a good point on TNT last night. You can't blame injuries for the Lakers Nets because the Heat haven't been at full strength at all and are currently in first in the East." Yeah, I saw that clip floating around on Twitter and I agreed instantly. It was Shaq saying, "I don't know what to make of this team because of injuries." And then Dwayne rebuts with, "Okay, but the Heat are number one." And it's the Heat. I mean, it's Caleb Martin and Struess and who is the third dude? He's a Euro player. He's got a great name. Damn it, I'll have to look that up. Give me 2 seconds. But yeah, the Heat have gotten strong play from deep in the bench. Spoelstra's gotten great combinations from all kinds of different guys. And they play hard every night. You know what you're going to get from the Heat. Oh, God, NBA.com. You're the fucking worst. Clicked on the Heat for their team, and it just takes me to some weird splash page that has their next upcoming game, and there are no other clickable links. It's like, well, what's the fucking point of this? It's not what I'm here for. Yurtseven, that's who it is. But they've been getting great play, and I think it's a solid point. So JMB saying to my discussion earlier about the Bucks, "In fairness, fans and organizations circling the wagon saying that it is us against the world or some perceived slight they twist to their own ends is not new." I agree. But I just think the Bucks are creating that perception as opposed to that perception being real. And then JMB says, "If I recall, Jordan would take any perceived slight and use that as fuel to destroy his enemies." Yes, but I don't think that they have the makeup. I don't think of them as Jordan-esque in that regard. I know that they have competitive mentalities. How can you not? You just won a championship and then two of the guys immediately went off and played in the Olympics. You want to win. You want to be a winner. You've worked your ass off to get to this place. But there's also a difference of Jordan and Kobe and guys like that where they legitimately want to destroy you and make your children feel ashamed for having the same last name. There is a difference. All right, so then there's a discussion about the Bucks, and we'll skip around a little bit here. Go down to the bottom. So Owen Hart says, "Kind of a hot take, but Robert Williams, a.k.a. Time Lord, is a better defender than that fraud Gobert. He is more mobile, better in pick and roll, and can actually play on ball and has better feet." I think he shows flashes of that. It's the consistency and the ability to stay out on the court at all times that is the difference. I mean, by the numbers, Gobert makes Utah year in, year out, consistently a lethal defense. And especially when they have no wing help, it's what killed them in the playoffs. And a lot of people saying, oh, Gobert couldn't flash out to the wings to protect for those three-point shots. But you're also asking him to do things that his wings aren't even willing to do on that team. Everybody still thinks twice about going into the lane because he's down there patrolling the paint. While I think Time Lord is really good, once again, it's the consistency, night in, night out, being able to do it. A lot of people are just nicely saying, hit the like button, like and subscribe. Thank you very much. I'd appreciate that. Jake Cleveland says, I think the Jazz are in trouble without Gobert and Mitchell. Yeah, Mitchell's out with what? Concussion protocol, and Gobert is out with, I can't remember. But each should be back in, I would imagine, relatively short order, especially Mitchell. But yeah, they're going to be tough for them. I don't know what happened right there. That's the first. Are you guys still able to see me? I have no idea. There we go. StreamYard was acting strange, but it looks like everything's back to normal. Oh, it looks like we got a lot of love going for Sixers and Embiid for MVP in the chat. He has leaped to the Vegas odds-on favorite as of right now. Whether or not he can actually end up playing enough games is the only question for Embiid. It's the reason he dropped out of the discussion from last year. But right now it's between him and Jokic. Those are the two guys that are leading the charge. With Durant out, Curry's shooting has fallen off, which drops him out of the conversation. I think Giannis may be third in the discussion right now. But Embiid and Jokic, I want to say Embiid is plus 400 and Jokic is plus 450. So basically it's almost even neck and neck on that one, but Embiid is. And if he ends up playing, you know, 65 to 70 games, I think he's got an excellent shot of, you know, winning the MVP this year. But we'll see if he gets to that 65 games. Because as of right now, he's missed, what were we at, 30, 47? So he's missed 11 games so far. So that drops him down to 71. So if he misses another 11 games, it takes him down to 60. That is right on the threshold of whether or not I think voters would be willing to vote for him. If you miss a quarter of the season, are you still the MVP? All right. And StreamYard just acted weird again and dropped me out. I have a feeling it's going to die. So I think that might be the place where we go ahead and end it today. My Wi-Fi seems to be acting up and StreamYard is not enjoying it. So let's just go ahead and cash in our chips while we're ahead. As of right now, and just say that was today's drop in dimes. I don't want to lose you guys entirely and abruptly end without saying goodbye. Thank you to everybody that joined in the chat. TJ Martino, Andrew and Andres Ortiz, Owen Hart, Daniel Saville, Riley Pangrass, Jake Cleveland, Yuri McGarley, JMB. And I believe that might be everybody, but my thanks to everybody that joined me today. Sorry if there were technical issues on your end. Stay safe out there. I'll see you guys next week with another edition of Droppin' Dimes. And if you could, like everybody said in the chat today, if you're watching this on YouTube or if you'd like to watch on YouTube, I do it live each and every week at 12 p.m. Pacific Standard Time over at youtube.com/droppin'dimes. So you can join over there. And if you're watching, like, subscribe, leave a comment. All that stuff boosts the profile of the show on the YouTube algorithm, and it gets other people into the discussion. And, you know, I'd appreciate it. Otherwise, if you're listening on a podcast, leave a review on Apple or Spotify. And that is it. You can follow me at Matt Nost anywhere. I'll see you guys next week with some more NBA action. Until then, adios. We'll be right back.